Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast, an exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back. We are on episode number
109.
109.
I actually really like, before every episode, our producer and cheerleader and so many more titles, Abhijit, holds up a little sign with the drawing. And this drawing is very cute because, right, the Japa beads have 108 beads. So, you know, our previous episode, 108, check it out if you haven't. But this one is the Krishna bead episode because the top of the Japa represents Krishna and it's bead 109 technically. So we're on the Krishna bead episode.
Aww, we're on
very good, Abhijit. Very good.
Thank you for sharing that with everyone. Yeah, I thought it was really cute too, but I like it.
I like it. Oh, my name is Shyama Sangeeta.
My name is Priyadarshini.
And my name is Shyamali, and we are the Modern Yogi Podcast.
I mean, I think they know that.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I don't need to say that by now.
It's okay. You never know. Some people just go straight into episode 109.
Did I tell you about one of my students that I teach at the school I work at, private Catholic school, and I didn't know they were going to check out Modern Yogi. And they're like, they told me the next day, like, oh, yeah, I heard it with my dad. And I was like, oh, what episode did you hear? And they had just gone straight into the one that talked about the universal form. And I was like, And the kid was like, it was a little confusing. And I was like, yeah. And I just sat there mortified thinking what they might have heard.
Yeah. We're just so grateful that Krishna still has Shyamali employed at this time. There's never a day that we're not grateful for that.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's true. Yes. Very true.
All right. Anyone want to do a recap on the last episode?
I want to I want to say, Shyamali, I didn't mean to say like, oh, you can't say we're the Modern Yoga Podcast. I'm sorry. I feel like that came out that way. Oh. Because technically, we are all, even those listening, are the Modern Yoga Podcast. Every it's one of us, because it's a book club, right? So we're all a part of this.
We're all the Modern Yogis. Yes.
Yeah,
totally. All
so you're just
yogis.
Like making us all into a little family every time you say that.
Yeah, that's sweet. I love that.
Okay, sorry.
Cool.
It's like just looking at us like we're crazy. So I have
no,
to
no,
go
no.
Back
it's
to...
good. We're all the Modern Yogi Podcast. Okay, anyone want to take a stab at the
recap? I got it. Okay, so we're in chapter 13. We're still talking about nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. It's basically we're talking about this body, what it's made up of, the soul, the super soul. And in the last episode, we did a little bit of a recap. Text 19 was a bit of a recap. And then text 20 went on to talk about how we as the soul are basically constantly being affected by the material nature, but we remain the same, right?
Yeah, throughout good way things. To put it. Yeah, good summary.
Yeah. And then we went on and talked a little bit about other stuff.
We talked a lot about the challenges that can arise from getting caught up in the struggles of this material world.
Yeah. Which are so many.
I know.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I feel like we could have a whole episode, even more than that, of conversations about like experiences and like struggles and things, because it's very prevalent in everyone's lives.
Totally. Yeah. And I think without going into the whole conversation, both of you touched upon a feeling that's so important to talk about. And that feeling of, I'll never reach that stage of perfection. And that's such a widespread feeling. Mm-hmm. It could be a whole episode and more. But that feeling, I just want to quickly say, should never prevent us from feeling inspired and from connecting to Krishna. Because when that feeling deflates us instead of inspire us to do more, then that's not what Krishna wants. So I think it's about celebrating what we are doing.
What did you say? Keep on swimming?
Just keep swimming, because the struggles will come and they will also go. And we can still make our progress on our, you know, like one step at a time, we just secure more of our spiritual progress.
Yeah.
So. Just keep swimming.
Just keep swimming.
Just keep swimming.
And this is the Bhagavad Gita podcast.
All right. The invocation, please, ladies.
Om Jnana Timirandasya. Yananjana Shalakaya. Shakshurun Militam Yena. Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. Mm-mm-mm. All right. Chapter 13, text number 21, Priyadarshini.
Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effect, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world.
Do we want to break that down before going into the purport?
Oh, can you repeat it actually one more time?
Yes. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effect, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this material world.
Interesting, because they're almost like personifying, like, right, nature is just kind of more like cause and effect, versus when the living entity comes into play, we are the ones that determine whether we're going to suffer or enjoy the cause and effect of this world, depending on our actions, our karma, our decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure how to break that down any further, because it's actually said very simply, but I do feel actually this purport made me really excited about this chapter. Like, okay, this chapter has some complicated wording, you know, with the field and the knower of the field and all of that. But this purport I felt like was really cool, and it broke down a lot of things. So if you don't mind, I'll start it and you guys can just jump in.
Yeah.
Okay. So first and foremost, Prabhupada is explaining that there are 8,400,000 different species of life, and these varieties are creations of the material nature. Okay. So what creates these species?
God. Nature.
Yes. God created them.
Did you say species on purpose? Because that would totally go in line with just keep swimming. Like, instead of species, fishies, just keep swimming.
Oh my God, no. I didn't say that on purpose. Actually,
that's so genius. Yes, species.
Species.
No.
Species.
How do you say it, right?
Species.
No, I don't know the difference. Anyways.
Oh, but that was very good.
That was good.
That was good.
Species.
Okay, so to pop quiz one more time.
Yes.
8,400,000 different
species.
Thank you.
Species.
Of life.
Yes.
Are created by
God.
No, you just failed this, and this was the retake, and you failed again, dude.
Sorry. Wait, you're that stupid. The actual answer.
Krishna. Obviously, Krishna creates everything, but in this.
Okay. That was her real answer. Sorry. Thought she was joking. Continue.
Shama Sangeeta, what is happening? I just read it. Okay, it's they're creations of the material nature. Obviously, Krishna creates everything, but we're breaking things down, so we're being more specific, right?
So wait, ask her the question one more time. I just want to see it. Please ask her. She's chatting. She's looking at
us. No. I wasn't
Why
even paying attention.
Prabhupada says it right here.
What are you...
Species.
Oh my God.
Species.
Okay, stop.
Will you please ask me the question
species.
One more time?
Species.
Sorry. Okay, sorry.
Ask
continue.
Question.
No, don't ask me. Just continue.
I'm just going to tell you. Okay, listen.
Yeah, just tell me the answer.
Listen.
I'm listening.
8,400,000 different
species
of life are creations of the material nature.
So let me ask you the question. What created Shama Sangeeta, these 8,400,000
different. So you're trying to make her. You're
right.
Making her struggle, and now you're struggling.
We can't do that. That's called karma. That's called nature.
And what created the species?
Material nature.
She would hate to teach us.
So good.
So funny. Okay, anyways, moving
material
on.
Nature. Moving on.
Okay. So we're talking about when we're talking about species, what are we talking about? We're talking about souls, right? Mm-hmm. So that means Shama Sangeeta, Shyamali, Priyadarshini, and all the listeners
in
our podcast. Yes. The
aquatics.
Everything. Yeah.
Whales.
Okay, you're reading ahead, huh?
No, I actually didn't read this.
Nice. Good job.
That was very good.
Thank you.
Was very good. Okay. Anyways. So these entities, I'm going to call them entities because I can't say the other word, arise from the different sensual pleasures of the living entity who thus desires to live in this body or that. So in this particular sense, when it says sensual pleasures, we're talking about the senses, right? So as living entities, based on what we want to see, hear, smell, touch, experience with our senses, we thus have that desire, which then gives us the particular body or species of whatever this or that. Does that make sense so far?
Right.
Yeah.
When that soul is put into different bodies, they enjoy different kinds of happiness and distress. Their material happiness and distress are due to this particular body and not to themselves as they are. So we are eternal.
Right.
We are parts and parcels of Krishna. We're a drop of the ocean. We are pure. We're spiritual. We're like wholesome and all the wonderful things. But our desires create the bodies that then lead us to having these happiness, distress, these experiences.
Right.
And that is our desires, not necessarily from who we are, but rather these desires we have that create the material nature to give us particular bodies and different experiences. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah. Wait, hold on.
Break it down. Yeah, break it down.
So if we are souls, but mm-hmm. then we come into particular bodies, these bodies have desires, and then based off of those desires, our next life is because of those desires?
You get the bodies you have because of the desires you already... So the bodies come because of the desires, not the other way around.
You get the next body based off of the previous life's desires.
It could be... So let's say that you're just a soul and you don't have a body yet.
Oh.
As a soul, you have a desire.
Okay.
You have a desire to control. You have a desire to be maybe as strong as Krishna, as powerful, to be able to do all these kinds of things, right? So then you say, well, I want to be really strong. That's a desire you have. And so therefore, the material nature creates mm-hmm. a body that can fulfill this desire.
So like a rhino.
Yeah.
Nice. I got it. I understand right. it now.
You know what's interesting, actually? Yeah, even breaking it down on the funny little moment where you kept saying God, you are right in that.
See?
Better
finish.
Yeah. So you're right in the sense that out of these 8,400,000 different species, the souls did come from God, which we read in the previous texts. Mm-hmm. But as Priya's breaking it down, the variety, we're talking about the variety, not the souls. The souls came from God. The variety in the different types of species in the bodies are what she's breaking down comes from our desires to enjoy, which determine what body we'll have, which determines how we interact with the material nature. So in a way, yes, God created the souls, but then the variety within the souls that those, or within the bodies that the souls occupy, that's where... That's where... that's the difference. And that's what material nature is determining.
So an example is this, let me know if this is true or not. So say like you go on Instagram and there's a whole bunch of like people who have like fan pages dedicated to their dog, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And say you write a comment under there that says, oh man, wouldn't it be great to have a life of this dog? Mm-hmm. All they do is eat and sleep and play and get taken pictures of and then they get brand deals. Wouldn't that be great? Mm-hmm. Right? But you actually mean it because like, that sounds like such a great existence. Mm-hmm. Because of that little desire that you had, in your next life, would you become a dog? Oh.
Okay, so we don't have the perfect mathematic equation to know exactly what will happen,
yeah,
but there will be a fulfillment of that desire in some way or another.
Interesting.
All the desires we accumulate, like one life after another, we're trying to fulfill these desires.
Okay.
But in this case, we're really talking about like before you even get a body, because we're talking about like the origination of it all, right? Because it even says here that in this happiness and distress that the body is experiencing is not what we really are, right? And it says in our original state, there is no doubt of enjoyment. Therefore, that is our real state. So when we are with Krishna, when we are, you know, in that perfect state, we're happy, we're great, like all the things are wonderful. That's why they say like when you go back to Godhead, you'll never want to come back. Like it's a perfect situation, right? We're only here to fulfill those desires that we have accumulated.
Yeah.
And it starts from being just a little spark before you even have a body.
Gotcha. Ooh, yeah, we're going back in time.
Prabhupada breaks it down a little more, because you said, Shama, you asked at some point, oh, are those our desires from our past life? So Prabhupada says, it could be more clear to state that this body that we currently have is the effect of our senses. So let's break it down a step further. The senses, as Priya described, are the instruments for gratifying desires. So now the sum total, the body that we have now and the instruments of the senses, they are offered by material nature. And it'll become more clear in the next verses that the living entity is blessed or quote unquote damned with circumstances according to our past desire and activity. So we have senses. If we let those senses run wild, we'll do all sorts of things and then accumulate different types of desires. If we try to meditate, for example, and control our senses, our actions that we take will be different and it'll influence what types of desires we have. So if by the end of our life, whatever our consciousness is, that determines what types of desires we have, which will determine the next body or species of body that we acquire.
Yeah. Makes sense. That then ourselves, we are the cause of attaining the bodies that we get in our next lives, basically.
Right.
Based off our desires and our karma.
Yeah, it's not like someone's randomly choosing like, oh, this next life, I'm going to make Shama Sangeeta a whale.
Instagram dog.
Oh, sure.
Sorry. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Sure. Instagram dog. So she can be famous. Like, imagine. Like,
I know. Could you imagine? You got to be careful what you wish for, especially in those comments. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's cute how Prabhupada worded it here, because according to our desires and activities, then material nature places one in, he calls it various residential quarters. So the being ourselves were the cause, as Priya said, of attaining such residential quarters and his attendant enjoyment or suffering. So I like that this world can be broken down into almost like residential quarters or dorms in a college. Are you going to get a little bit of a better dorm life situation or a crappier one? Or what type of dorm are you going to get?
Yeah, I love it. And then he keeps going. He goes, once you're placed in some particular kind of body, one becomes under the control of nature, because the body, being matter, acts according to the laws of nature. So at this time, the living entity has no power to change that law. Suppose an entity... Oh, you want to say that?
Okay, yeah. Can I do that?
Yeah,
suppose
for sure.
An entity is put into the body of a dog. As soon as he is put into the body of a dog, he must act like a dog. He cannot act otherwise. And if the living entity is put into the body of a hog... Thank you, Shamali.
I had to visualize.
Then he is forced to eat stool and act like a hog. Interesting.
Yeah, similarly, if the living entity is put in the body of a demigod, he must act accordingly to his body. That is the law of nature. So he's basically saying, all these desires we have, we put us in this position, but then once we're there, we're stuck there, right? And sometimes we're really stuck there. If we're an animal, what are the chances that we can change one, our consciousness, our destiny, this, and that, like a wild horse or a whale or this and that? What are the chances of being able to develop our consciousness to be in a greater state, right?
And it's so interesting with this concept of our desires at the end of our lives and our actions determine the type of body we receive in the next life. You could apply that even to different types of human beings. We all have different natures, different propensities. Some people have very intellectual minds that they can study philosophy for so long. Others have, I don't know, different natures lend themselves to different types of activities. And that makes sense that not everyone is not the same. Everyone, we are equal on a soul level, but our bodies, our natures, they're all different and they're determined by our desires in our past life. Doesn't mean that all the different types of natures can still take to the path of bhakti, because that's that's what levels the playing field, you know, that's what allows everybody access to then elevate our consciousness, our desires, control our senses. But it's so interesting because you can totally see that some body types, some natures allow people to sit for hours and just study the philosophy. Other bodies are more hyper and they have to go outside. And so different bodies lend themselves to different lifestyles, which we acquire different types of karma because of our activities and refine our senses in different ways. So it's just very interesting to think of it in that way.
It is very interesting, but like, you know what's kind of crazy? Because it's like you can't remember what you did in the past. So you get this particular body and this particular personality and these traits, and you don't even know what you did in the past. I mean, you could speculate, and let me tell you guys, I have speculated. But you just can't.
Yeah.
You can't figure it out. You can't remember.
Yeah. At this retreat that I was at, I mentioned it a bit in the last episode. There was this really wonderful lecture given by this wonderful person, Mataji. I don't know if that's the right way to say that. Anyways, and she painted a picture that to be a human being, but not just a human being, but to be a human being born with the ability to be connected to Krishna in some way, whether it's you were born in a Krishna conscious family or you got connected to Krishna in some way or another, is as rare as a turtle in a log poking its head out, and that log is in the middle of the ocean. Right? And so it's like this idea that like we've been given this great opportunity. Right? This capacity, the mental capacity of one, a human being to be able to choose and have conscious thoughts that are intellectual and philosophical and all of these things, and to be able to do something with that. So it's it was a very impactful quote for me, because I was like, whoa, gosh, so much pressure, you know, like that's how it felt for me. But I know that I can feel like so much. It can also be like, how grateful am I for this opportunity, right?
Break down a little more your feelings. So when you initially heard that, it felt like pressure, right?
Yeah, I think it was like the way I wrote it was, to be chosen and not step up with full conviction is scary.
Oh, to be chosen and not step up with full conviction is scary, because you feel it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah. It's like, and again, I think it's like to not step up with full conviction is the idea of like, what does that look like to be fully, fully Krishna consciousness to the capacity that this mind, body, and everything that I have has, right? Mm. Like, what does it mean to be in my 0 to 100 mentality right. of, you know, do I have to be like a pure devotee and live a complete, like, what does that really look like for me personally? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's a scary thought to take it for granted.
So wait, going back to the verse. So if it's super rare to be a devotee, right? And even like have access to this knowledge, the fact is that we must have desired this in a past life in order to be granted this very rare opportunity.
And not just desired it, but we must have worked hard at it because it's, you know, Krishna says like your spiritual progress throughout your lives is always saved. You always come into this world with whatever you've already worked up. You know, we might not remember anything from our previous lives. We might not know, but like our progress is always there, right? So the fact that you've gotten this close to Krishna, to whatever capacity, maybe I'm not a pure devotee. I'm not a sannyasi. I'm not a this, I'm not a that. They've maybe worked more lifetimes into becoming closer to Krishna. Who knows? I cannot know for sure, but to get to this place, like how can I take the most advantage to either go back to Godhead in this lifetime or make the maximum amount of progress that I can in this lifetime? That's like how my brain thinks.
It's so true, Priya. It's a hard balance between holding on to the urgency of it because life is short, life is fleeting, and tomorrow's not guaranteed. And we've talked about that a lot. And when you go through accidents or situations where you brush with death real close, that puts that urgency into perspective. But at the same time, you want to also feel inspired and not be so hard on yourself that I'll never reach that point where I want to be. So it's this balance between also appreciating the gist of that verse, how rare this is, this rare opportunity. Let me not waste it while also not getting totally overwhelmed that you're petrified. I don't know how to maintain a nice balance then.
Yeah, for sure. That's the work we're all trying to do, right? Because I think a lot of people struggle with this idea of balance, right?
Like, yeah.
How do I balance my career, which is so important to me, and then also my spiritual life? Or how do I balance my family and spiritual life? Like, I think it's a forever conversation that people are having, or maybe not having, maybe they're keeping it inside. But I think I'm sharing this also to like put it out there that like we're all struggling and we're reading this book and we're reminding ourselves of like what it means to have this opportunity, what it means to love Krishna, what it means to all these different things, right? To remind ourselves and just keep swimming.
Yeah. Just keep swimming.
Can I say one quick thing about this? Because my dad, this was a few months back, we were having a conversation of a similar train of thought where he said, you know, a lot of my God family, different devotees my age, my parents are a little older now. He says, a lot of us, we have a feeling of like when we first joined the movement decades ago, we thought, this is amazing. We're all going to be pure devotees in no time, you know? And then we get to this stage in our lives and it's very easy. I hear so many times people feeling like a little bit like they're not maybe worthy because they feel like, shouldn't I be better by this point? Shouldn't I be a pure devotee by this point? I'm not worthy, blah, blah, blah. It's a whole spiral that you can get into. And he said, it's very common for people to get down like that. Yeah. So he's been thinking about this topic a lot. And we had a whole conversation where he was saying one answer that he likes to say is that, well, obviously Krishna thought we were worthy and worthy enough to come again into contact with this philosophy in this life. So it's not that we're not worthy. Why? We were worthy enough in Krishna's eyes and we were given a chance again at this philosophy. So we clearly, there is worth within us. And then we're trying. And that's what Krishna holds on to and recognizes.
Yeah. I think that aspect, that trying, right? Because it's everything that the Bhagavad Gita says. It's like put all the effort and not be attached to the results. At the end of the day, that's all we can do. And I think what your dad was saying and, you know, the experience of like older devotees who are like, oh, I thought maybe this is not what they said, but it's like along the lines of, I thought I would have been a pure devotee by now kind of thing, right? Yeah. Like we think that, oh yeah, by 60 something, 70 something, I'll be fully devoted to Krishna and only that, right? And it was also something that came up in this retreat that I went to and someone said, keep names out of it. Someone said, we always think that once I do this, it's all going to be figured out, right? Let's say like, okay, once I start chanting like four rounds, like everything is going to be better. Yeah. Once I get initiated, I'm just going to be able to chant 16 rounds no matter what. My consciousness is going to be higher. I'm just going to be better, right? Yeah. Once I get second initiation, it's going to get better. It's like, we're thinking that once we reach a point, it will stay there or be better. And the reality is that that's only under our control and it's only based on our effort. There is no such like maintenance thing that happens. It's like we maintain it, right? Yeah. Like we're the ones. And so it's really all about like continuing the work. And I think to your point, in a way that doesn't deflate us, yeah. right? Continuing the effort and not being attached to the result.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's all we can do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Exactly. I like how you summarize that. Continuing to put the work and then not being deflated by the result. It's almost like just put your hands up and surrender and let the river carry you. I'm going to keep trying, but you got to let the progress unfold naturally.
Yeah. Prabhupada always talked about this notion of enthusiasm too, right? Where it's like, we still have to maintain that. We can't go into, I should have been better by now, or I should have been this, right. I should be doing this and this. Look at this person's doing all this, but still maintaining like individual enthusiasm for the journey of getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I am the ultimate example of, you know, all the struggles of, I don't know, I'm just kidding. But anyways, I think I want to control things so hard. Mm. You know, I want to say like, if I just do everything like this, it should be perfect, right? Like even that is a sense of control, right? Or like we want it to be a certain way. And the reality is like, we cannot control it. So we really, it's a message to keep reminding ourselves of, because we still think like, well, if I just, even the thought of, if I just chant 16 rounds, I'll love Krishna, right?
Right.
Well.
Right. That's such an important point, Priya, because control, we think of control in the negative aspects of like, let go of control, but control can even be us trying to control the positive aspects that'll make us grow. So that's exactly, we can't control the outcome. We can try and try and try, but the outcome is going to be out of our control.
Yeah. So
Effort is important, but also loopholes are important too. And this episode will be out during the holy month of Kartik.
Yes.
And I think that's really, really important. If you are looking to kickstart your spiritual life, just take a couple steps closer to Krishna, whether it's chanting more rounds or reading more or just spending time at the temple and offering a lamp to the deities, whatever you can do to find that loophole and let's spiritualize. Go ahead.
So sorry.
I'm good.
Say it again.
Spiritualize. Loophole.
Sorry.
That's all good. I'm good.
I was like so excited to join you in that thought process. I was just going to say, let's give them more ideas of what they can do. Because I feel like sometimes what happens during Kartik is people are like, oh, I don't know what to do. And then that, you know, like what are some ideas like of things that you...
Also, I should have prefaced with Kartik is the month of Lord Damodar, which is baby Krishna, right? Mm-hmm. There's a special pastime with Lord Damodar. We'll post that on our Instagram. But it is the most spiritually charged month of the year. So anything that you do, any spiritual things that you do, it's like time, it's magnified by 1,000. So you chant the name of Krishna, it's magnified by 1,000.
I've heard 10,000 at times.
Never mind, let's go with 10,000.
No, I don't know, I'm just saying. Wow.
That's even deeper.
Between 1,000 and 10,000.
Yeah, between 1,000 and 10,000. So anything that you do during that time, it gets magnified, any spiritual thing.
Right.
So this
is
my favorite time of the year because it is the most beautiful loophole that Krishna has invented for us. And you just got to dedicate yourself a little bit more and it counts for a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Krishna is so open to the love of his devotees and so ready to be bound by the ropes of our love. So any steps we take to try and take a little steps closer to Krishna, he'll, with so much enthusiasm, reciprocate that.
So the steps that we can take, what are the examples of things that we can do during the month of Karthik to strengthen our devotion?
Yeah, I was thinking about some of them today, actually. Like, for example, maybe one Prabhupada lecture a week. And like just kind of digest it and like, you know, process it or like even that. By another guru or like senior devotee of some kind, one lecture a week. That makes it less pressure because sometimes people think it has to be every day, but like any progress that you make is wonderful, right?
Totally.
One extra round a day if you want that to be the thing. Some people really enjoy japa. I met someone who was like, I love japa. And I was like, wow, you're amazing.
You're in the 1%. That's really,
that's so amazing. 1%. What a great thing to love. What else, Emily? What are some other ideas?
You know, a good one that my mom said recently, because we had the one guy in our sage group who he has a newborn child, a 3-year-old kid. His plate is full. He's a full-time teacher. And I don't know, his plate is, he's juggling a million balls. So he was so sincerely asking, like, what can I do to maximize Kartik? Like, and he's already like zero time in the day. So for someone who really has no extra time, my mom gave a great suggestion about, you can also, instead of adding stuff to a plate, if you have no room, you can say like, for this month, I'll give up whatever, chocolates or this. You can detract something that you enjoy, and that can be a sacrifice that takes no time. Of course, if you have time, add on stuff like Pri was saying, and that's wonderful. But if no time, take away stuff that maybe like, yeah, for the whole month, I won't eat chocolate and I love chocolate. And that's something that takes zero extra time.
Our ladies, now we're on air and we should talk about our Karthik fruits.
Yeah.
What is something that we can hold each other accountable to for this holy month?
We're going to make it a thing.
I'm going to say that I will let you know by next episode.
Or how about me and Shamali go and then do you have time?
I actually wanted to think about it. I started thinking about it today, but I don't want to just commit randomly.
I wrote mine down.
She already had it. Nice.
But I never planned to talk about this on the podcast, actually. This is just for me because I love Karthik. It's my favorite time of the year because when you go to 8 o'clock Aarti at the temple and it's just filled with lamps, it's like the most magical time of the year for me. Mm. I love Karthik. Okay.
Beautiful.
It is from October 17th to November 15th this year. So I'm going to obviously do my 16 rounds, but I'm going to, at minimum, I'm going to offer a lamp at least once a day, whether in the temple or like to a picture. If I can't find a picture, I'll do it on my phone. But I'll even if it's a tea lamp, I'm going to try to offer at least one lamp. I'm going to try to read Krishna book every day.
I love that.
Even if it's like a sentence, I'm going to try to make sure to read it every single day. And the last one, something that I've always wanted to do, I wanted to memorize the Hanuman Chalisa. Hanuman is a Lord, devotee of Lord Ram. And so I wanted to memorize that. So, and I haven't been able to for many years. So,
nice.
So those are my four. Okay.
Very nice.
You guys have to hold me accountable.
Beautiful. Okay.
All right.
I have a couple, but I may add if I come up with something else. But the ones that I had on the top of my mind now were, I did this last year where I chanted 4 extra rounds. So I was trying to chant 20 every day.
Nice.
And I maintained it for the whole Kartik and it felt so fulfilling because it ends up transforming your whole consciousness because you search for the pockets of time. Because I'm a full-time teacher and I'm exhausted. And when I get off of work, it's already a struggle to just do my rounds, make dinner, get ready for bed and repeat. And it's hard. So all of a sudden during that whole month of Kartik, when I was really trying to do 20, I was seeking the little pockets up. Do I have 7 minutes here? That's a round. I can totally do that. Oh, at the beginning of this planning period, I'll do another one. And that makes the whole day you're kind of seeking pockets to chant and it transforms your mentality. And it was beautiful. And even I remember one night where the day escaped. It just became a long day. I was dealing with things. And by the end, I was like, I'm not going to let this one issue I had to deal with ruin my 20 round streak.
Yes.
So I sat there outside and I finished just chanting. And then I just felt almost this reciprocation of inspiration. I felt like I was acting in a way maybe that Krishna would possibly be happy with me. And I felt it in my heart.
Nice.
And I went to bed feeling so content, you know? So I wanted to do the 4 extra rounds every day. I would like to, every night, whether at the temple or at home, I'll offer a candle and sing the Damodarasticam prayers. Mm-hmm. So that, and then I'll try to add on I have this book of talking about, it's by Shivaram Swami, talking all about the depths of Mother Yashoda's love for Krishna. And I thought it's a really sweet book to read on Kartik.
On brand.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to like try to read as much of that as I can, but definitely like the 20 rounds will be like my thing. Cause that's a lot already for me now.
Yes.
So that's what I'm going to go for.
Okay. Good luck.
And the prayers every night.
Okay.
Yeah,
20 rounds, the prayers, and try to read that book.
Yes.
Okay. Sick.
Yeah.
All right. Amazing.
Do you want to do next episode? Are you want to do this episode? Totally up to you. No pressure.
No, I don't want to say it now. I want to think about it.
Okay. Think about it. It's important. That's fine. Anything else on this verse?
I think it's just a nice tone to end on that after talking about all these ways we acquire our material bodies, it's beautiful to remember that in the spiritual world, none of this exists. The spiritual world is pure People are happy. It's satchit ananda, eternality, knowledge, bliss. That's what we're full of. We're not struggling to fill, as Shama said, the God-shaped hole, trying to fit it with different pleasures and desires that leave us dissatisfied. No, it's just a whole different ballgame. And it's, I think, really sweet to remember that.
Yeah. Also, and another sweet note to end it on is like, even if we go through all these struggles and through all these different obstacles the material world puts out for us, in all circumstances, the super soul is always with us, right? Like the super soul is always with the individual soul, with everyone in their heart. So like even through the struggles, even through everything, Krishna's there with you.
Yeah.
Krishna's always there.
That's really sweet.
I love that note, Priya. It makes me think how we've heard before how from the moment the living entity, our soul, enters this material realm, we're never alone because Krishna immediately comes with us as the super soul, as our friend to guide us. It's like, I know you're going through, going to traverse a difficult journey, so let me grab your hand and take you there. And it's just, we need to quiet our mind enough to feel that spiritual energy, that presence that's always there.
Makes us feel less alone, you know?
Yeah.
For sure.
In this world.
Yeah.
Super sweet.
All right. Text number 22.
Shama Sangeeta.
Shama Sangeeta. Okay. Krishna says, the living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus, he meets with good and evil among various species.
Okay.
That's so fascinating, right?
Yeah. Okay, I have to read it again. I don't know what I said. Okay. Yeah, soul pass on my day. Oh my God. Okay, let me try again. Because I don't understand. I didn't get it.
Read it and pause wherever you need to. Okay. Like you're breaking it down.
Okay, Krishna says, the living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus, he meets with good and evil among various species.
So the middle line might be confusing. This is due to his association with that material nature. What is due? His enjoying or suffering, right? His subsequent enjoying or suffering when he just follows his senses and enjoys the material realm. That's kind of what happens when he comes into contact with material nature.
So material nature, living entity, lives life. Enjoys happiness, ignorance, passion, and all the other things. In this world. And then due to his association, that is actually happening because of his association as well. So like if you're feeling in the mode of goodness, it's probably because you are hanging around with mode of goodness. If you're feeling mode of passion, it's because you're hanging around. So that your association is also what makes up what you are being in contact with, what modes of nature you're in contact with. And this is relevant to you meeting good or evil amongst various species, right? So like good people, bad people, bad lizards, good lizards, like whatever you find along the path.
Good lizards.
Right. I would love to know what type of student you are to teach in a class.
I was literally like, ooh, what's a good lizard? Oh, the Geico lizard. That's like, that's where my head
went. That's hilarious.
That's
very really
funny.
Priya, what you said is an important point to highlight, that whatever we come into contact in this world and whatever we associate with long enough determines our consciousness, because we might think we're above the influence of things like, oh, I'm so strong. It doesn't matter what type of environment I'm surrounded by or what type of friends I have. I'm strong on my own, but no, that influences. And that's why all of these even little rules and regulations within the path of bhakti might seem silly. But if you think about just little details of things like maybe why we don't consume or eat certain things that are maybe in a lower mode of ignorance because it'll affect us, you know? So everything has its effect, even if it's subtle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so Prabhupada kind of goes on talking about the same idea of like the living entities move from one body to another. He uses the word transmigrates. So the living entity transmigrates from one body to another. And as long as we as the living entity are captivated by this false manifestation, we continue to do so. So the if we're continuing to be wrapped up in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance, and the association of these things and our desires and the senses that we want to gratify and all these things, we're going to continue coming back to the cycle of birth and death, right? We've talked about that before. Yeah. He's just kind of reiterating it.
Mm-hmm. Prabhupada also said how he is put into different bodies is explained here. It mm-hmm. is due to the association with different modes of nature. So for instance, like if you spend your entire day sleeping,
yeah,
right? And you're just in the mode of nature and that's all you want to do, blah, 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 blah. And like, there's this example that's in the Gita where it's like, if you spend all that time in that particular mode of ignorance, that body that you get in your next life is one of a bear because bears hibernate and they mm-hmm. sleep, right? And so like literally how you engage with these modes of nature literally will determine your next life.
It's all about the desires. You want to sleep all day? Right. Krishna's like, got you.
Got
no problem.
You. Got you.
Yeah. Right? And yeah, so Prabhupada basically saying, we don't even actually want to just be in the mode of goodness, although that's nice, better than the other modes. We need to rise above and go beyond the three modes and become situated in the transcendental position, that realm where nothing is beginning, middle, and end. It's all eternal. Mm-hmm. And that is Krishna consciousness. Because unless we're situated in that transcendental realm, our material consciousness will obligate us to transfer from one body to another because we will have desires. We've had them since time immemorial. So we want to go beyond the modes.
Yeah, I love that. And then he says, hearing the science of God from Krishna will lose our long cherished desire to dominate material nature, and gradually and proportionally, as we reduce our long desire to dominate, we come to enjoy spiritual happiness.
Which means we have to realize that we're not in control.
Yeah.
And the moment we do that.
I know. Yeah.
And how do we do that? How do we realize we're not in control and change our conception? Prabhupada says that change can only come about when we hear from authoritative sources. And the best example, Prabhupada says, is this one here. Arjuna is hearing the science of God from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to continue that eternal conversation here with all of the modern yogis of the world.
Yeah. Amazing, guys.
Amazing. That's beautiful. Great. Well, okay. Look at you. You just listen to this podcast and we're just speaking about this podcast and we're slowly relinquishing control.
Yeah. And actually being able to enjoy spiritual happiness.
That's the perfect way to end that. All right. Well, please join us next time as we tackle chapter 13, text number 23.
See you next time.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.